She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Well, what else could I do? I said, I'll see what I can do.
Good evening, KLRN land. It is Thursday night, and this is your early introduction to the weekend. This is The Culture Shift. I am Brad Slager, entertainment writer with a number of outlets, and every fortnight foray into the important entertainment news. Joining me is America's most laser-focused and digitized Amish individual, Ordy Packard. What's going on, Ordy?
You know, I am just living the dream in the wonderful fall that is California gives. The wild temperature swings from 20 degrees in the morning to 60 degrees in the afternoon. Loving it. Wow. How you doing, man? What's going on? What's going on out in America's Wang?
Oh, just the usual, actually. We're still coming off our election high, although the rest of the country is kind of milquetoast about it. We kicked ass, stomped heads, took names, and then threw those names in the fireplace, never to be seen again. That's how much the Republican Party in this state operated. The rest of the nation, not so much, but hey, when you're in the land of DeSantis, this is what happens.
Take what you can get.
I had severe enjoyment watching the press trying to reconcile what took place, where they were coming out and saying things like, well, the only reason Ron DeSantis won was because of gerrymandering.
How do you gerrymander a state?
Yeah, a statewide election was gerrymandered. That's an interesting call. Same for Marco Rubio, the senator of the entire state.
Yeah.
Yes, gerrymandering was at play there. Very good call there, folks.
I do love that the people who use the term gerrymandering the most don't know a fucking thing about what it means, or anything else, for that matter.
Well, I've just come to find out in the media that the term only applies to one party, even though both do it.
Sure.
Somehow, that's the way it works. Because if it's the Democrats, you'll notice it's always redistricting, and it's always presented as a wise and cagey decision to make the districts make more sense. The redistricting the Democrats were involved in should deliver favorable results, unlike those devils that are gerrymandering in Florida.
Right. Have you seen Maryland?
Yeah. Take a look at Jerry Nadler's district and get back to us.
Right.
That thing is like, I don't even know how they justify some of their stuff, and I don't try to. I just point and laugh. That's my job.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the guy who goes from a belt to a neck, so.
Yeah. And manages to still get reelected despite.
He's like the opposite of Robert Reich. Anyway.
Absentee in the mindset, but he gets selected. What can we say? But just having some fun as usual. We didn't cover this in show prep. I meant to ask you, and then I screwed things up. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about the FTX fiasco at all. Would that apply or not to our show?
You can't get into it without getting extraordinarily partisan politics. And yes, while it is that, I think there still needs to be some investigation done into it, and we know that won't happen. So,
yeah, it was just with amusement that for the last few days, I was like, well, why is everybody talking like kindly about this guy? Like, I saw a Washington Post piece yesterday, I think it was, it said, wow, it's really unfortunate this happened because he was a big contributor to the pandemic effort. And man, I don't know what kind of risk we'll have going forward without his money. It's like, wait a second. He's not a good guy. What the hell's going on here? Well, yeah, I found out today, like at least half a dozen media outlets were getting invested from the company.
Yeah,
that's going to get you a fair amount of kid gloves treatment on this $1 billion scandal. But OK, got it. That's what's happening. See, cool. So, yeah, that's going to actually play out for quite a while. It's going to be fun to watch it not get covered as it becomes a bigger scandal. But I only wanted to bring that in as maybe an attempt at a segue, because we have NFT news.
Yes, we do.
It's just, I'm almost at a point now where I just gloss over when I see those three letters. It's just like, but then there was an entertainment attached to it, and suddenly my ears perked right back up again.
Yeah, and this one.
I might need your help on this one, because okay. I wasn't, I'm not all familiar with the Bored Ape Yacht Club.
It was a series of NFT. It's just fucking virtual Pokemon. It was a series of NFT art that was very popular amongst the smart set and, you know, the elites. And yeah, you get what you deserve.
Okay. All right. So it's almost like a Reddit forum for the, what was it, the retard investors or something like that? But it was,
well, NFT. Yeah, but the Bored Ape, no, it was, this was just you bought the art. This okay. was the, you know, it, as your take on NFT art in the past, this is kind of how that applies. Because okay. you know, art doesn't actually go down in value.
Mm-hmm. But as we're going to see, the virtual digitized representation of said art can plummet significantly.
Yes. Yes.
So
this is the NFTs. Okay. Well, I understand and appreciate the concept of NFTs. They are a good economy thing. They otherwise, they're tulips.
Mm-hmm.
If you get that reference.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should get that reference.
Yes. It's when my people controlled the national economic trade. Yes.
Yes.
And it was a very interesting thing, if anyone's not familiar with tulip bulbs and how they became the guiding principle fungible asset across the globe. Check into it. It's hilarious and fun and all of that. But NFTs, yeah, are the digitized tulip bulb, if you will.
Sure.
And, you know, like I grasp the concept. That's about as deep as I've gotten into this. But at the same time, the very fact that almost every single person now is producing an NFT tells me there's not much value beyond maybe a core set of NFTs.
As with everything, it has potential. But as I said, it is a good economy thing, not something that you buy as you're going into a recession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've like seen where you could go to, I don't know, like a Comic-Con or something like that. And if you get a VIP pass, that will include your own personal NFT of your pass or something of that nature. It's like, okay, if you print Monopoly money, that doesn't mean you just gave somebody money, is kind right. of how it feels like to me. You know, well, we just made NFTs. Cool. Good for you. But these Bored Ape Yacht Club images were all the rage, apparently, at one
point. Yeah, they really were. They were huge.
So huge that Canadian pop sensation Justin Bieber decided to get in on the game. Almost on the ground floor, but no, more like he got in on the penthouse.
Right. He came in at the top. Yeah, as once the building was completed, he went, you know what? I want in.
Yeah. I want a piece of this action. So he purchased an NFT of one of these Bored Apes for $1.3 million. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, its value is currently, and this is the one, this is like, again, everybody throwing obscene money at the top of the market, you know, buying the penthouse in the neighborhood that is about to be swallowed in crime. That Bored Ape NFT is now worth $74,000. And I think that may be a little high.
So, this is valued, I don't know, 1% of what it used to be or something like that. Or maybe a little more than that. 3%.
Yeah, about 3%.
So, yeah. So he's lost 97% of his value, let's just say.
Yeah.
And
Twitter. Okay.
Yeah, and it may not even be valued that high, because I saw one article that said, although it's valued at that price, the only bid offer for it was like around $60,000.
Yeah, that goes back to the old Pawn Stars thing. Is that what they're asking, or is that what they're getting?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you could scroll items on eBay and it'll have a price on it. It's like, yeah, that's what they're putting that price on it. But if somebody doesn't pay for it, it ain't worth that. So
it's been that price for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, many other similar items have gone for much less.
Sure, sure. So, so Justin has made a, well, he's made an investment. I can't really put a modifier on it beyond that.
Sure.
But this is just, it just cracked me up seeing it. And then the image, of course, is him sitting there looking slightly forlorn next to a intentionally drawn forlorn monkey.
Yes, and that is the Bored Ape.
It just, yeah, a bored ape and a distraught Canuck mm-hmm. sharing an image. It's beautiful. It's a lovely little
montage.
I almost might want an NFT of this picture. I wonder what that would go for.
What wonder what the NFT of CNN Plus's last broadcast would be worth.
Is there a marketplace where we can see the pricing on this?
We know what the first one went for.
But... And the, I don't think any second ones went, did they? I think they put up like 8 or 10 for sale and only 2 maybe got picked up, if I recall.
Yeah.
Where do you go to get the valuation on them, though? I mean, do the owners have them posted so you can see the value somewhere? Or is it like a stock where there's a public price?
No, it's more like Bitcoin, where it's a price that everybody agrees on. So let me see.
Because, yeah, the NFTs they were selling were of the initial broadcast on CNN back in, what, early 1980, I think.
No, it was the very first broadcast of CNN Plus.
Oh, I thought it was. I thought they had a number of them, though. Like they had.
I don't know if there was more, but.
Thought there was like a Ben Bradley clip from like the very first CNN ever, and that kind of thing. And that was, I think, what got picked up. And then any of the other 8 that they offered, like I think they were doing CNN broadcasts of significant historical news events and things like that, but. None of them got taken from what I last saw. Interestingly enough. But it's
Wait, here's another Bored Ape. Sorry, just to give you an example, because it is a thing. There was a board. I mean, this is back from December of last year. Bored Ape NFT worth $284,000 and change with accidentally sells for $2,800.
How does it accidentally sell?
Again, that's the you put your price on it, and then just
type
the value. Yeah, that's kind of like that whole, you know, European thing where, you know, we use comma or we use decimal places and they use commas. So anyway.
Ah. Oops. Yeah, that's I guess there's still some lessons to suss out in this marketplace.
Again, with the FTX and everything else too, it is caveat emptor.
Yeah, it's just, we're kind of kicking around at the bar last night that I'm waiting for Wall Street to kind of pick up on this, because it seems like every 2, 3, or 4 years, one of these hotshot Gen X or millennial CEOs comes on the market with some wild ass valuation of a company worth tens and hundreds of billions, and Wall Street just chucks money at them. They find out it's a complete Ponzi scheme that falls apart inside of 2 days.
Right.
I mean, this was what happened with WeWork, you know, the remote office.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
That was going to revolutionize the business marketplace. And this guy was like building his own cult, basically. And people that were working there were like, wait a second, this is not what, huh? And the funny thing is, there was like one of the locations were in New York. And it was almost like they would buy an entire building and like everybody would buy into it and have their own office that was an independent business inside this place. That was the idea, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And one of the guys that was doing it, his business was actually studying analytics of companies and began to study the analytics of WeWork. and started to see what a complete farce it was and false. He basically proved the company he was working with in was not what it was saying it was to be.
Right.
And yeah, the entire thing just kind of blew up. Same thing with the guys behind Firefest. They were.
Oh, God, that was fantastic. That was the most.
That was just beautiful because of who got burned.
Right.
It was like, we're only going to invite influencers and self-important individuals who were promptly eating off of styrofoam trays of cold rice, and that was their gourmet meal on site.
Trapped on the island.
But the guys behind it too, it's like all their businesses were the same kind of crap too. Like they were selling like exclusive VIP membership cards for some kind of damn company, and it was all of it was just a house of sham. And
right.
All the time, Wall Street puts valuations on these companies again, tens of billions of dollars, and there's nothing to it.
It's the perception of reality versus reality. You can sell the perception of reality. You know, it's like currently on Twitter, everybody is losing their shit because Elon Musk has closed the offices until November 21st. Yeah, okay, whoopity fucking do. That's Ford. That's the weekend. Take the weekend, guys. But everyone's like, oh my God, rip Twitter. Twitter's dead. And, you know, just no, I'm taking a 4-day weekend because I don't know who to trust. So
it was amazing this morning. Somebody had, they read the 30-page, I guess, federal court document on FTX, and they weren't even operating like a normal company. Like people would put their crypto in there and they would just throw this all like in one account. They weren't,
yeah.
Nobody was keeping track on who had what valuations, and they would just pull money out of this account for God knows what they wanted to do in the Bahamas. They had no accounting at all. Somebody had asked them about one particular executive, and they just like, oh, we just put that up in the cloud, crap like that.
Yeah,
but the thing is, the SEC investigated this company like in April, gave him a check mark, everything's good, guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's yeah, I've been joking about it ever since this whole thing happened, that a couple months ago everybody thought Coinbase was just shady as fuck. And, you know, because they put this thing as like, look, if we ever go bankrupt, we use your crypto to help pay our creditors first. Well, that makes sense because really, I mean, well, it doesn't make, but the thing is that you're just giving them money for, hey, I have this much Ethereum. And they say, and you agree, and they agree you have this much Ethereum. But there's a saying in cryptocurrency, unless you have the keys, you don't actually own the coin. So in these exchanges, you don't actually own the coin. You just own a virtual representation until you actually pull it out. But in, you know, everybody was talking about, oh, you know, because when Coinbase put that into their TOS, everyone's like, oh, that's shady as fuck. My crypto is my crypto. And I'm, you know, and there was a bank run kind of on Coinbase. And I'm going to be laughing if after it's all said and done between FTX and Binance and Uphold and the other exchanges, that Coinbase turns out to be the only one that isn't shady as fuck. I mean, we already know PayPal's shady as fuck. So, yeah.
I mean, with PayPal, I use them. I don't have anything with them, though.
Right.
They're like my proxy payment, but I don't keep any dollars in that account whatsoever.
No.
And never will. I just have to laugh, though, because I'm watching some of the media companies trying to report on the FTX meltdown and not mentioning their involvement with the company at the process. Like, the funniest was, I think today it was, you know, Semaphore, the brand new startup, like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I think they just went live like a month ago, but they've been gathering a bunch of journalists from across D.C. And it's Ben Smith and the other Ben started this new news platform. One of their reporters was talking about Vox being involved with FTX.
That tracks.
When yesterday I saw Semaphore was invested by FTX when they started. And they even put out some kind of garbage announcement that, well, although they did have seed money with us, all of that money was USD. It was not crypto. Sure it was.
Yeah,
FTX right. Always dealt with hard currency in the Bitcoin universe, of course. Yeah. Yeah, it was just like they were like, no, ours was real money though, so it's not a big deal. We're not at risk, and it didn't go away, and we have it all. Okay, go ahead and report on the others involved with FTX, I guess. Knock yourselves out.
I would just love if it took, like, you know, if this whole thing with it folding took Vox and Daily Kos and, you know, a lot of the far left publications that, you know, kind of thrive in that space due to shady backing, you know, like Lincoln Project and shit like that. Bulwark.
They're on the up and up. Everything's golden there. No problem.
Sure, you know, when you got Pierre Cash writing your checks for you.
Well, not anymore from what I understand.
Right, yes. So, dear God, they have to rely on their talent.
And a chill goes through every spine in the offices.
So.
Yeesh. All right, well, let's see. I mean, we got just like a little bit of everything today.
Yeah, the news is kind of all over the place. What I really want to do is I got to talk about Jessica Chastain. This one amuses me to no end.
Loved this story when I saw it.
This is fantastic.
I saw this come through and I was like, wait, one, I do recall seeing her. Two, I recall seeing this image.
Right. This image is familiar. Where have I seen? Oh, right. The fucking poster.
So, and I haven't even checked. I think she's probably got something coming up that she's promoting.
Yeah, it's it was in the.
This is the time of year that if you see a lengthy profile on anybody in Hollywood, guaranteed they're angling for an award. This was basically their agent going to a writer and saying, she'll sit down with you for hours and say anything you want.
Right.
Just give us 2,500 words and 15 pictures if you can.
And it's timing because, you know, there's some Harvey Weinstein stuff going out. It's the 10th anniversary of Zero Dark Thirty. And she just won the Oscar for Eyes of Tammy Faye. And yeah, so, yeah.
And that was recent. I've totally forgotten about that already.
I did too.
That's how little adhesion there was with the last Oscars.
Right.
But in the course of this lengthy Hollywood profile, Jessica was talking about Zero Dark Thirty, as you said, came out a decade ago. And she was kind of bemoaning the fact that this military movie is taken on a jingoistic tone since its release.
You mean the movie about the Central Intelligence Agency took on a jingoistic tone.
Yeah, the story detailing the capture of Osama bin Laden by our military complex, they're turning this into a pro-America message?
God,
didn't see that coming.
Nerve.
Unless you cracked open the script.
Right.
So
you really had to dig deep into the
subtle
nuances of Zero Dark Thirty.
I'm going to have to give this a reread. That slipped right by me. But in the course of this interview, she was talking about how, you know, it's a Kathryn Bigelow movie who, you know, won Best Director for Hurt Locker and all that. Nah, nah, nah. But, produced by a woman, she starred in it, and she was just dismayed that they didn't focus enough on the female quotient behind the camera in promoting the film.
Yeah, and the still that they chose to use from it in this article with C Magazine is actually in the fucking poster.
So Jessica's...
It is the background of the dark in Zero Dark Thirty.
She complains that she wasn't featured enough in the promotional materials for the film. Now
she's in the center, the absolute perfect center of the poster.
So for the article, they used the still shot. It was a promotional shot from the film, and she's kind of in character. She's in the desert. She's wearing some layered brown clothing and sunglasses and kind of has a professional type pose or such. And there were a number of posters that come out from the movie. Most of them were in big block letters, Zero Dark Thirty, but they were opaque and you could see the still shots through the lettering.
I'm posting them in chat right now.
Okay. I was just about to. Good. And one, not only is she featured on the poster, But the very image they used for this article is the one in the key art for the movie. So the woman complaining she wasn't featured is featured in both the article and the poster at the same time with the same shot.
Okay, so in this article, she's also blaming Harvey Weinstein because, you know, he wanted to be named as a producer in it. The producer, the actual producer said, and no. And so there was like all this, you know, they're claiming all this negative press went around Zero Dark Thirty, except for the fact that it was nominated for Best Picture and Chastain best nominated for Best Actress in the picture.
Yeah, Shane Ward didn't get out that she was won. I don't even know.
What actually did win Best Picture that year?
My Oscar trivia is wanting, let's say.
Yeah, so my Google foo is strong.
All right.
Argo. That was your Argo one.
Ah. You know, the other Middle Eastern.
Yes.
Jingoistic picture.
Right. There was a theme 10 years ago on the, that would have been the 10th anniversary of 9/11. So around there. So, okay.
Well, this is also after quite a few years of Hollywood not getting the point that when they made anti-American motion pictures regarding our military, nobody went to go see these pieces of crap. They
weren't very well received.
I mean, it was, what is it, The Eyes of Ayla or something like that. And I mean, there was like one after another. It seemed like they came out every 6 months and it was like, here's how corrupt the military is and our soldiers are screwed up here and they're corrupt killers over there. And people are like,
wait until you hear about the UN, guys.
Don't care. These movies would uniformly make like 7 million.
Right.
8 million.
Right, at which point they would get the moniker of art house, you know, a dark look into America's military. You know, it'd do great at fucking like Sundance and Cannes, but no further than that.
Yeah, they would be in select theaters in New York and L.A. And we're waiting for an extended rollout. That would never take place because after the first weekend, nobody would show up to these pieces of crap. So,
right.
They started to say, let's try some pro-America and see what happens. Ooh, crap ton of money. How about that? And so you get American Sniper and you get.
Yeah, American Sniper, Zero Dark Thirty, Maverick, not the Red Dawn reboot.
What was the other one? Peter Berg did one that was.
Not Hurt Locker, because that's actually the director and producer of Zero Dark Thirty. I know what you're talking about, though.
Nope, I got it on the tip of my brain. Hang on.
I'm waiting for it.
Lone Survivor.
There you go.
So, like, all these, you know, rah-rah, hey, isn't our military great? Look how heroic our guys are. Would actually draw audiences, and ooh, what do you know?
Interesting. You mean Americans like to see movies about Americans succeeding and, you know, being the big good guys? And no way.
You know what? We should put art house theaters around flyover countries. That'll work out wonders.
Yeah, there's the only time that really works out is if they just do, like, you know, the only time they open up is to do Rocky Horror Picture Show on a Saturday night midnight thing. And then they shut down the rest of the week. That's, you know, that's Middle America's art house theater.
Yeah, we'll play Rocky Horror so we can keep the doors open, and then the rest of the schedule will be our pet project stuff.
Yeah.
We'll just put up with those kids on the weekend, I guess.
Right. But those cosplaying LARPers.
I'm trying to figure out how Jessica Chastain can star in a film, complain about the marketing of said film, and be unaware of the marketing that she's complaining about. Because as soon as she said I wasn't in the promotional materials, I did Zero Dark Thirty poster. Right. And I think the third image to come up was her on the poster.
Right. With the first one being the main one.
Yeah. That was like a landscape shot of the choppers flying over a village or something, like, you know.
Which is actually in the lower quadrant of the picture, the one that she says she wasn't in either.
Right, because I mean, there's
the one I posted in chat, that's the one I remember at the theater.
Yeah. And in fact, there was another that was the same format, but just her image.
Uh-huh.
Because like they did one for each of the characters. They sometimes do this, you know, and they'll have
each. So they'll have like 5 or 6 of them on your when you're walking down the.
Like the main actors will all have their own one sheet in character, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's oblivious to this as she's complaining about the very movie she was nominated for. Right. This is why I love Hollywood. It's like, do you not operate in reality? I mean, you're going to complain about something. The 30-second research would sum this up for you.
Well, and that's the kind of thing that just, you know, that's, you know, 10 years after the fact, that's something she overheard her publicist say, but didn't quite get the gist of the conversation.
I think this is probably exactly what happened too. It was like during Oscar night, they were probably at an after party and one of her reps probably pulled her aside. It's like, oh, Jesse, you know, if they had just promoted you, baby, you would have gotten that trophy.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of this studio.
Right.
You were beautiful. Don't get me wrong. You did great, honey.
Yeah. The director, who was also a woman, didn't want to have a woman succeed in their female centric films. Yes.
The female producer didn't want to feature the actress.
Right.
Who starred in the movie.
It's all Harvey Weinstein.
I mean, damn. Yeah. And that's right there is the crux of it, because their entire argument is, well, we have a female director and a female producer and a female lead, and they didn't want to feature me, those damn women.
Okay, honey. So here's my thing, and this kind of goes to, you know, like the conversation a few weeks back on the episode I missed with, you know, oh, they just don't, you know, America just isn't ready for, you know, a gay-centric movie. You're like, okay, Brokeback Mountain, but still. So, you
never saw a gay person in Hollywood before.
Right. But I mean, here's the thing is that if that was like a bait and switch, as she is alleging that, you know, they didn't promote it being about the movie really being about her at all. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody, you know, all these rah, rah, fucking testosterone. Yeah, we're going to watch some brown people get blown up, men go to the movie and see just, you know, Jessica Chastain's acting in it. They're just, the movie would not have succeeded. Her own premise is flawed with the very fact that it was nominated for two Oscars minimum.
Well, and the movie features the capture of Bin Laden. I mean, that was the crux of the plot.
Sure.
Her character was completely fictionalized.
Right.
And she's saying she should have been at the forefront of the movie.
Which she was
starring in it wasn't enough. We need to feature the fake character to obliterate the plot line of a real heroic event that took place. That's the centerpiece of the film. Got it, Jesse. Okay, let's go with that.
Thanks, honey. You did great. Yeah, they really screwed you out of that one.
I mean, sometimes when the most obvious crap is right in front of you.
But again, who but us is going to know this?
And this is why we do the show. Mehdi Hasan from MSNBC. He was complaining that the Republicans that are taking over the House have pledged to investigate Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. The Democrats had never and would never investigate the Trump children.
Yeah.
And I proceeded to send him numerous headlines of the Democrats investigating the Trump children. Yet.
He's just, he's probably like Aaron Rupar that just farts out a fucking tweet and just mutes it immediately after hitting send.
Oh, no, he's responded to me before.
Oh, okay.
I've challenged him on something and he's come back. He's like, oh, how could you even say that? And it's like, well, because I'm dealing with facts.
Okay, you know what, really quick, while we're talking about challenging people who have responded to you, this really doesn't have anything to do with anything that we talked about. I just love the fact that, Brian Stetler and showed this week that he now watches Fox News religiously for free. He is no longer contractually obligated to obsess over Fox News since he is no longer employed by CNN. He does it in his spare time now.
He complained about something on Fox News and everybody almost had the same response. It's like, dude, you don't have to do this anymore.
You don't have to subject yourself to, you know, obviously something that physically pains you.
I mean, damn.
Some acquit it thing.
It just, that made my week, I think. It's like, he's still doing it. Oh, the poor thing. Does he know he wasn't
fired? It was just a happy coincidence for Tater.
Yeah, I gotta pay attention to his timeline more often, I guess, because I don't anymore since he's not
in the media. Right. So.
I just love it, though. Just love it. Oliver Darcy's still at it, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, they haven't let Tater Tot go yet.
But he's kind of toned down a bit. Well, I was kind of laughing because the other day he was talking about Trump's speech to get back in the race, right?
Uh-huh.
And he just commented that, well, you know, of course, Fox covered it and CNN gave the speech. MSNBC, however, didn't cover the speech whatsoever. And he just moved on. It's like, wait, Ollie, hold on. Hit the brakes. Yeah. This was always the worst thing on the planet. If Fox right. didn't cover a Joe Biden speech or something. But it's cool when MSNBC glosses over a news event, huh?
Okay. Speaking of that, too, I can't remember which blue check said it, but they're just like going, can you believe that CNN is showing this entire, you know, Trump, you know, announcement speech? And I'm like, wait until you watch a empty tarmac for 2 hours, dude.
Yes. I mean, it's
just, this must be your first election. That's adorable.
Yeah, it's anytime Trump burps, it's going to be headlines. OK, so get used to it. Just going to prep you now, buddy.
Yeah, this is the world you live in now, Chief.
But Oliver the other day cracked me up because you probably saw the story about 15,000 protesters in Iran got the death penalty.
Yeah, I did.
Well, it turns out the actual number was 2, oh. not 15,000. But
quite the little again
divergency of accuracy there. But
yeah,
it. It cracked me up because I see a piece in his newsletter where he's like, now I'm going to let everybody know just to be a little careful when sharing news events out there. So make sure they're accurate. Okay.
Thanks.
And I was like, wait. I thought spreading misinformation was the death of our democracy. It's going to kill the country. It's treasonous behavior. Why are we not? Oh, turns out Hollywood celebrities were sharing the news story, yeah. as did the Canadian prime minister and other people on the left. So now it's not misinformation. You've got to be careful. It's
misinformation.
You gave a mistake there. You've got to be careful. If somebody on the right had shared that story, though, it was intentionally hateful destruction of the United States of America.
And some sort of phobia and ism.
I was just like, holy shit, dude, this is specifically what you're fighting against every single day. Because celebrities did it. It's OK.
You know, speaking of celebrities. You know what's coming up, right?
Well, it sounds like a segue.
America's fastest growing sport.
Ah, OK. That's where you were going. We could have gone in any numerous areas there. But yes. And of course, my article did go up now that we're on the air.
Okay, of course. But, now we can promo it. But it's not. Yeah.
I just wanted to share it with you so we had proper intel, you know, sure. show prep and all that. But this very evening on CBS, they are broadcasting Pickled.
Celebrity Pickleball Tournament.
The celebrity sports competition where a number of luminaries will compete in the paddle sport known as pickleball. Hosted by Stephen Colbert. Doing the play-by-play, I assume.
Yeah, and then you got... who's doing... him and Kenny Loggins are doing the national anthem on it, too. Because, wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Uh-huh. But, yeah, you've got... you got some people from CBS Sports doing the color commentary. This is a collab with Stephen Colbert, Spartina, CBS, and Funny or Die. But yeah, it's part of Comic Relief. So, all right, you know what? Comic Relief has always been good. Yeah, when they used to do stand-up, it was better. But, you know, we'll take this. And so, yeah, of 16 celebrities competing, I recognize very few names.
Yeah, I did.
Jimmy Allen, Murray Bartlett, Dierks Bentley, Jamie Campbell, Will Ferrell. Okay, you know, what are you laughing at? If you say Will Ferrell, I know you're lying. Max Greenfeld, Louis Guzman, Sugar Ray Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
Aisha Taylor, love her.
Yeah.
You got to do that in Jeffrey Tambor's voice, though. And Emma Watson.
June Diane Raphael and Paul Scheer, they're the married couple. He's of the he's from the league, and they do How Did This Get Made podcast.
Yeah. Kelly Rowland.
Emma Watson's there. And it's just it's gonna be basically two teams of celebrities squaring off in matches, all 16 in bracket format for 2 hours playing for the Golden Gherkin Trophy.
See, I would have had more respect for it if it was cornhole.
Well, here's what's interesting. As I saw this come across a couple days ago, I did some research because I wanted to have this up for this evening.
Mm-hmm.
Pickleball has taken off during the pandemic. I guess it was because one of the few ways people could get outside and safely distance from each other. It's kind of like miniature tennis.
Yeah, it's like miniature. If you're not familiar with pickleball, and why would you be? It's like it's tennis, badminton, and ping pong all rolled into one, which is basically all the same thing anyway. So,
and really, the popularity of the sport is that it's anaerobic. You don't do a lot of running around.
No,
because of the constrained court setup. It doesn't mean you have to race all over the place like in tennis. You can pretty much stand your ground and play the game.
Right. If you got good reach and a good vertical leap, you rule the game.
I should play.
There you go.
And it's, this has been around actually since like the 60s when it was invented. It just kind of was there in Washington. It was dormant for a while. And then right around the 1980s, 90s, it started to pick up. And then it blew up with the pandemic. And there are three professional pickleball leagues going on. Makes sense of that. The biggest one apparently is called Major League Pickleball. 12-team format. Expanding to 16 next year. Including new team owners Tom Brady, LeBron James, Drew Brees.
Okay, well, you know, I figure it's time to announce this. As a retired six-time Amish Reich fighting champion, I have gotten into pickleball, but I'm retaining my amateur status for the Olympics.
Staying true to your people, I see.
Yeah.
I got to get some more of those Reich fighting videos. they on like YouTube Dark or something like that?
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
they pulled them down, but it's a premium.
Yeah, well, you know, it's you got to be careful, though, because sometimes it's just a snuff film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or as we like to call it in these parts, a bonus.
A bonus, right? Well, that's Florida.
But beyond tonight's celebrity competition, Hollywood is even expanding further. Not one, but two documentaries on pickleball are in the works.
Just yeah, give the people what they want.
And what cracks me up
pickleball
is there's
some... actually is one of those things that sounds like it should be on Urban Dictionary, something dirty.
Yes. You gotta pay extra for that in Reno.
Right.
Now there's one that's probably close to being completed. It's gonna be in the 2023 Sundance competition, actually.
Of course it is.
Randall Emmett, he's a kind of a big producer, actually, in Hollywood. He's done The Irishman and a number of other titles. He's also an avid pickleballer himself. So this is a project dear to his heart.
Well, you know, if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Exactly. So he's ponied up $1 million for this documentary, and I guess he went around to the various leagues this year, interviewing players, getting backstory, the history of the game and such. That's not all.
But wait, there's more.
Last month, it was just announced. The production company Film 45, which is the workhouse of director Peter Berg, He of Friday Night Lights, Hancock, Battleship.
Yeah. Sure.
He's working.
One of my secret guilty pleasures.
Mahalo, motherfucker.
Right. Battleship Battle Los Angeles.
I have to got to look for that page in my novelization and highlight that particular phrase.
Mahalo, motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm. But he's also working on his own film. Next season, he's going to be touring the pickleball tournaments, speaking to people, and highlighting the transformation of the amateur sport to the professional ranks. I'm pretty sure he's going to get Tom Brady on camera, because after this season, he's got time.
Right. Well, you know, that and, you know, since his whole FTX gig has gone under, too.
True. Look at that.
And his marriage.
Coming full circle. Damn you, Giselle. But, this is either going to launch pickleball into new heights of popularity, or it's going to kill the damn sport, because once corporate gets their hands on something, it's no longer cool. Although I don't think this is one of those instances, because this is played by a lot of the older set of this country.
This may actually replace shuffleboard.
Yes, the demise of that.
What to do with all of the...
Now we've got, I've got a park right down the road from me.
Pickleball?
And they put four pickleball courts in, let's say, 2-3 years ago.
Did they take out the pickleball court?
They are always filled. No, we don't have bocce. I think we got to go to another park for that.
Benoit?
But they... That's an indoor sport, Gordon.
Gordon, no.
No, our courts are always filled up, though. And the funny thing is, I was on our Slack channel at Red State. I was claiming the story for tonight, and all of a sudden, everybody was chiming in. Oh my God, we got pickleball here! Oh my God. And they were saying how the old people in their area, they glom onto the courts, like they have signups for the courts, but they have a roving band, so they all team up and sign up together. So they occupy the courts the entire night. And if you show up wanting to play, they're like, get out of here.
Get out of here, you crazy kids. This is our court.
So it's like, stay off our courts, you damn kids.
They ruined the tufas.
The funny thing is, they were saying, it's like, yeah, it's like all the old people are playing it. And it's like, I'm looking at the list here. Everybody in the Slack channel's in their 50s. And they're like, holy shit, we are them.
we have become that which we...
Because half of them are saying, oh my God, I love pickleball. I know, it's so much fun, and we play all the time.
But it's the olds. The olds are playing it. You are the olds.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. It was like, so your friends is what you're saying.
Right.
One of our guys works at a Dick's Sporting Goods, and he even said that after tennis, their pickleball equipment is the biggest seller in the store.
I would totally, that totally tracks. That fits my headcanon perfectly.
So, ride the wave, folks. This is the future. Pickle ball. Soon in your theater near you. All right. Well, what else do we got percolating? There's all kinds of news.
I think we need to go to break, but before we do, we just need to make this quick announcement, and this is sad news. Kimberly Herron, who played the Dream Ghost in Ghostbusters, she was also in Romancing the Stone and in the ZZ Top Legs video, passed away at age 66.
Yeah, I saw the clickbait headline this morning. I wanted to go punch an editor in the throat, not from any of my sides, but the headline was something like, featured Ghostbuster performer dies, find out which one.
Yeah.
And I had to scroll through half the story to find out it was somebody that didn't even have a speaking role in the film. How about that?
Yeah, she was also in Give Me All Your Love and the Sharp Dressed Man videos, too. They actually credit her in Deadline. They credit her with ZZ Top's popularity with her appearance in those videos on MTV.
She brought them to the MTV generation.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll buy that. It's always good when you have a music video you can watch with them sound off.
Uh-huh. Sometimes the best time.
Not that I recommend it necessarily for ZZ Top, but there are those instances, and that would have been one of them. All right, so we're taking a break here?
Yes.
Okay, well, go get the refills, folks, and we will be right back here on the Culture Shift in about, I'm going to take a flyer, 254? 354. Okay, I was going to go with 47 this time, but all right. I was close. I got the under.
42.
Perfect. All right, gang, we will be right back here on the Culture Shift.
What are you playing during the commercial break? Oh, so you let us in with a... Oh, nice. Nice. Yes.
Frankie cool. Sounds praise, excited.
Praise. It really... Have you heard it, Brad?
Shatner
doing Common People.
I saw you put it up there, but I didn't have time to listen.
With Joe Jackson? I mean, it's fantastic. Yeah, I saw you drop that too. That's also good. So much talent.
All that talent. And Shatner. All right, I will be back. Let me go through Lou.
Okay. No, I like it a lot. That's, and, you know, as we've talked about, you know, since then, you know, he's kind of like gone down the concrete bond rabbit hole, and there's a lot out there that I forgot about too. Yeah, Concrete Blonde's one of those, they flew under the radar as one of those if-you-know-you-know bands from the 80s and 90s. Yeah. Right. Kurt Cobain. But Concrete Blonde was actually, I remember still in Hollywood, I was in high school long before Hole and all the other ones came out. So it was kind of like a metal Pixies kind of thing. They were more metal than punk. 89. Yeah, we're pretty close. So it would have been about the time you graduated that Concrete Blonde came out. Yeah. Not very well. Not very well. Yeah, mine was Rodney on the Rock and Christ, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He's on Richard Blade and he does the 91X thing. Or the first wave on XM now. Yeah, he was on KROQ Morning for years before they went to Kevin and Bean, and then eventually they switched formats. Yeah, but he was their morning drive time guy forever. Yeah, no, he was the one who really pushed like Depeche Mode and The Cure into LA culture. And Rodney on the Rock was that. Yeah, so Rodney at night, he was the one who brought in like Agent Orange and a lot of the SST, early SST labels, Husker Du and that. He introduced them to Los Angeles. Yeah. Yeah. Firehose and... very familiar.
Don't come back to me for a job. You made your bed. Now sleep in it.
And welcome back to the Culture Shift, where we are guiding you through what is deeply important going on in Hollywood. What's top of the brain with you, Wardy? What's striking you right now?
Well, what's striking me is that Cranky didn't hit mute, so I've just been talking LA music to myself because he was muted. So everybody in chat has been listening to me babble on over Concrete Blonde.
Ah, talking to yourself.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well,
so
let's see. We were but, just okay, we mentioned award shows recently. We should maybe segue to that.
You want to talk Brandon Fraser?
I was thinking just that.
Yeah. And I just want to point out that we currently live in a timeline where the words Brandon Fraser and Oscars are being used unironically.
Yes. Mr. Dudley Do-Right, George of the Jungle himself, is now an awards contender.
Yeah. Encino Man.
Yes. He's had a curious career where he went from just playing those hokey jokey roles to a section where, well, he was doing The Mummy and action movies and things of this nature. And then he just kind of disappeared. Didn't really. I saw him doing a couple of things. He did some stints on TV and he was on Scrubs for a while.
Yeah.
Played like the older brother, I think. And things like this. And now he's making his comeback. This is kind of common for the director to pull these actors out of obscurity, much like he did with The Wrestler and Mickey Rourke.
Sure.
Now we got Brendan Fraser playing The Whale. This is the name of it. It's a single set drama where he plays a severely obese individual.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting absolute raves for this role.
See, this is, I'm looking at this as the John Travolta in Pulp Fiction thing, where John Travolta had just kind of pretty much faded out of the public eye. And then all of a sudden it took a director like Quentin Tarantino to bring him back into, a new generation of popularity. And I think that this could actually be that thing for Brandon Fraser.
Yep. Yeah. This is following that pattern. Let's see. Mm-hmm. And he's been at a number of film festivals, Cannes included.
Sure.
I think we've talked about this too, where he was receiving like the 14-minute standing ovation. And we were like, come on, really?
Right.
Like, who does this? But he's like number one in the clubhouse favorite for the Oscar already. I mean, that's like how much advanced publicity he's getting for this role. However, he might be hamstringing that very effort. Now, for probably valid reasons here, but.
Right. And again, I think that here we'll get into my take on all this, but they're saying that he is hamstringing his ability to win an Oscar by his refusal to go to the Golden Globes.
Yeah. And I probably qualify that now because it used to be. The Golden Globes were the whore of the awards season. They're the very first one on the schedule.
Uh-huh.
It's a complete sham.
Yeah.
The studios knew this and would play them up because they basically would say, oh, those bunch of whores in the foreign film press. And then they would promptly use them exactly like whores.
Right.
Throw money at them in gifts and everything to get the nomination. And then the studio would use the nomination in promotional materials to launch the Oscar campaign for a film or a performer. So everybody was basically in on the game.
Golden Globe winner Brandon Fraser for The Whale.
Well, maybe not this year because Fraser's come out to announce he will not attend the ceremony. As a result of absorbing sexual assault advances from a member of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Yeah, apparently, if you wonder what happened to Brandon Fraser, he actually retreated from the show business world for a while. And this was in a 2018 GQ interview he gave where he revealed being groped by a former HFPA what would you even call him? The chairman or whatever?
Officer? Yeah. I don't know that.
Officer, yeah. So he was allegedly groped by the guy and kind of like, just backed the hell out at a HFPA luncheon.
But here's the thing. The Golden Globes have in the last couple of years really fallen out of favor.
Yeah, and here's the thing is that they fell out of favor because of the Me Too in a big way. That and, you know, they just didn't have the appropriate representation on their off their board.
Well, it was, yeah, kind of a doubling up on that. It started with the Me Too thing, and then when the Black Lives Matter exploded, then more attention was cast on them that they were not diverse enough, even though they're the foreign press, but they didn't have enough blacks, they didn't have enough women in certain key roles, what have you, and so they've really been kind of kicked to the curb for not fixing things. They've lost a major television contract. They're now going to be shuttled to cable, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they're on NBC. They're coming back in a big way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're going to.
NBC made a big show about not.
Yeah, they did. But you see, the thing is, NBC, like with their news division, counts on the hilariously short memories of the public, and they're going to be back full force on NBC in 2023. So, because this is something 2 years ago we covered how NBC kicked the HFPA to the curb, actually told them to get fucked, and there hasn't really been a Golden Globes aside from I think it was on USA or something, which is still an NBC network. Maybe TNT. Yeah, so, but yeah, coming back next year.
Yeah, I mean, like NBC made, like, you know, look how magnanimous we are. We're not dealing with these hateful scumbags anymore.
They made such a big deal about it.
Well, they did. I mean, it was like puffing out their chest. Look at us. We're magnificent. We are noble. We will never deal with these people again until 2023. Okay, got it.
Which, I mean, if you want to be completely cynical, and why wouldn't I be? They knew that they couldn't really do an award ceremony in the time of the COVID. So they used that as the excuse to not have to put the production value into it. And now that it's over. Hey, look who's back.
I guess. Yeah, so instead of saying we're doing this for the safety of everybody else, we're gonna puff ourselves up and say we're super people for doing this.
Yeah, we're good.
But now that the pandemic's over, okay, now we can have a party.
Oh, my God, sidebar on the story. Real quick, I just got interrupted real quick. There's a Yellowstone Monopoly game coming out.
No kidding.
Yeah. Trading your way through Dutton Ranch. Anyway, okay, I'm going back. I just saw this. The sidebar just jumped out of me. I said, that's fantastic.
And why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't you?
So
get every fucking dollar you can. Strike while the iron's hot.
But now we have to care about the Golden Globes. That's going to be so weird.
Do we?
Well, don't have to, but
see, and here's the thing. They have proven, this is my take, they have proven how irrelevant they are. NBC did it for him by not showing for 2 years, and yet the Oscars still went on. Granted, as we mentioned earlier, I couldn't fucking tell you who won the Oscars last year for anything. But
yeah, it was a nice mixture of movies nobody saw.
Yeah, also
I remember that. It was like, oh, wait, what? Huh? That was,
yeah,
he was. So,
but because there's already buzz for Brandon Fraser and The Whale. Like you said, at Cannes, at Sundance, and everything else, does he need to, as he said, I will not be a hypocrite and go to the Golden Globes. So, you know, my mother raised me not to be a hypocrite was his exact quote. So I don't think he needs it. Will he maybe just be nominated instead of winning? I don't know what he's up against. But for all the buzz around The Whale, I don't think he needs it.
Yeah, probably not. See, it used to be that it was kind of like the award season horse race.
Yeah.
It was like each week, you know, some other publicity would happen or such. And then the various guild awards would come up and
Screen Actors Guild. And yeah,
I was at one site where one of our guys actually, he made up a graph of the various favorites would put, you know, this one's in the lead. Now this one has moved ahead because of this thing happening and this publicity had taken place. And this one hurt his chances with some kind of comment about a woman's chest. And it was just comical the way
it's like, it's like the order board in Cabin in the Woods.
Yes, it pretty much was. I mean, he just, was making fun of all the whoring going on in Hollywood regarding the awards. And but the whores started right there at the Golden Globes.
This may be a way, if Frasier does this right, this may be a way for Hollywood to shake that albatross from their neck, because the HFPA and the Golden Globes kind of forced their way into it. Much the same with this alleged groping. You know, it's they didn't want, nobody wanted them to be there. They just kind of threw it a bone, and then all of a sudden they made themselves way more important than they need to be. I mean, you could say that about any awards show, but I mean, seriously.
But I've written up on the Golden Globes a number of times over the years, and they are the organization's an absolute joke.
It really is.
The qualifications to be a member are laughable. I think at minimum you have to put out like 4 pieces a year.
Right. And not be an American. That's about it.
But like legitimate reviewers and movie writers and stuff for various outlets. You know, like one guy I remember a couple of years ago from the Toronto Star.
Yeah.
He's one of the bigger names. I mean, he's puts out stuff on a near daily basis. And so he's like, I've applied to this numerous times and never even get close, because they have a policy. You have to be nominated by a member and have unanimous approval. So if one member says, I don't like him,
no,
you're not going to get in. So they'll have like this 60-year-old woman that shows up at junkets and puts out a couple of YouTube videos a year. She's a journalist, but
right.
The guy with the regular entertainment column that puts out 3 pieces a week for 10 years. Nope. He's not good enough.
Right.
This is the joke. And I don't know how many scandals I've watched this organization go through over the years. I mean, they've been caught number of times putting up a nomination because they found out, oh, 10 of the board members were flown out to Europe for a 2-week vacation on behalf of the studio and hung out with the stars like at Morocco or something like that.
Right.
Oh, and what do you know? Their movie got nominated. Huh?
Huh? Weird.
The movie that nobody saw when it came out in September and everybody hated.
Yeah. Like Zero Dark 30.
I was just like, because they also create 2 categories. One's for drama. One's for comedy and musical. So this way, 10 movies can be nominated and be called Golden Globe nominee.
Yeah.
That kind of whore crap goes on. But I mean, there's been a number of times that they've lost like TV contracts and scandals have taken place. And they don't do anything to fix them and they don't learn a lesson and they get their TV contract back in a year or two. So the whoring continues.
Yeah, and you know, ask you know why they didn't drop Burke from the HFPA. It's just like, I mean, because nobody wants to be the first one to, you know, again, because it is such a, you know, it is a brothel of foreign press. Nobody wanted, because it's kind of like going, oh, well, you're gonna go, let's talk about what you did over at, you know, the Beverly Hilton, and let's talk about what you did, or you know, so it's just such a
yeah, it's. And the thing is, like, nobody in Hollywood has any real respect for these people. And the stars put up with it because the HFPA will throw a crap ton of money at one of their charities. And
right.
So they'll show up at a luncheon or something on behalf of this group. And then in return, they get a check for their pet project. And the whoring goes back and forth as a result. And it's just laughable. Everybody's using each other.
Gee. Wow. It's who could have thought that an industry like that would do such a thing?
Yeah, hard to imagine Harvey Weinstein got away with this for decades. Huh.
Right. Yes. So this one I brought up because I knew it was going to be near and dear to your heart. This is kind of a big fucking deal.
Okay.
Bradley Cooper is set to star in Steven Spielberg's remake of Steve McQueen, Frank Bullitt character.
Yeah, this sounds cool.
I was not a big fan of the Hangover movies. Let me rephrase that. After the first one, it was like, stop, please. But Bradley Cooper is actually a good actor. I think he can pull off Steve. I think he can reprise Steve McQueen quite well.
Yeah, he's pretty good at losing himself in a role.
Uh-huh.
Which is hard to do when you're a pretty boy like he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's no Christopher Nolan, but...
but he's good at his stuff. I'll give him that. And even in The Hangover, it's, you know, I bought into it.
I mean, I bought into it in the A-Team, too, and that was one of the most campy pieces of shit ever. But still, he played good. Yeah.
He was in that one Guillermo Toro movie last year where he played a magician of sorts at the Carnival Barker scam artist.
Yeah.
And he was good in that.
Uh-huh.
So, all right, I'll give it a whirl.
And I always thought, you know, Bullitt is one of those. Okay, we talk about Smokey and the Bandit, Cannonball Run, and Hooper often on the show. But you don't have, I mean, outside the Fast and the Furious, you don't have good car chase movies anymore. And most of them don't have a plot to attach to it. Bullitt did. So, I mean, Bullitt was, it's just fabulous.
I almost wonder now if they're going to use the electric Mustang in the new version.
The Mach-E. But how about that? Yeah, I mean, how about that 11-minute car chase in the original?
Oh, yeah, and it was, you know, it was very granular. I mean, they used the hills of San Francisco, and then they're out on the highway, and it was, you know, just pure cinematography making it work. I will say one of the better car chases I saw was in the second Bourne movie.
God, that was a good one, too.
The climax car chase was like a fight scene.
And the thing is, I mean, these are, you know, actual practical effect, not fucking Transformers or thing, you know, actual real stunt drivers. That's when you really gotta, you know, throw it out.
Well, they've also modernized them a lot too, because they'll have the cars on the trailers and on gimbals and stuff like that to give you the actor in the vehicle itself.
Mm-hmm.
So they are using kind of stunts and props, but they are actually in a vehicle. It's not a stuntman shot from afar or something like that. So those effects even work because they're not CGI. They're still practical.
Sure.
Pretty cool stuff, though.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But I wanted to point this out, too, is that Josh Singer is actually writing the script for Bullitt, while Chad McQueen and Molly McQueen are executive producers on the film, too. So there is hope it will stay true to the original content.
Yeah, I will definitely give this a chance.
I will too. I'm
just work.
What's the opposite of disappointment? I feel that hope.
Positive. That's kind of weird. We're talking about Hollywood. Can't have that.
Right.
All right. Well, let's see. We have one more, I think. What's going on?
We got two.
Oh, okay.
Two. Yeah. Okay. So, The Witcher, I kind of teased this last night. 2 weeks ago, we talked about how Henry Cavill was going to be leaving the show and, Thor's brother was going to be taking his place. And it was, everybody thought at the time, oh, it's because, you know, Warner Brothers wants to bring him back as Superman. Well, that story never really kind of made sense to me, because they would work. I mean, filming a movie around a TV show isn't that hard. Actors have done it forever. So, you know, they can find ways to work around each other, but it has come out and it was always said, Cavill said that he will stay for the whole run of the series as long as it remains true to Andrzej Sapkowski's, you know, vision, you know, the books and the games and everything else. So, you know, and even the author has said about Henry Cavill, he is to The Witcher what Viggo Mortensen was to Aragorn. You can't, they're tied now. You can't have one without the other. So it has come out the reason why he would be leaving, and the showrunners have kind of said this in the back, that they don't like the books. They don't like the video games. They want to do their own thing. And that's why, you know, there was a lot of grousing about season two, about how it was so, you know, and she's the bestest ever kind of thing. I really wish I had Vincent Charles here to do it in the Doomcock voice, or Doomcock himself, because it's the bestest ever. It just totally Mary Sued the fuck out of season two. But I still found it entertaining. But Cavill did not. And he did season three, and he's going to nope out. And there is now a petition on change.org that basically says, Netflix, don't do to The Witcher what Amazon just did to Lord of the Rings. And they started out, they wanted to just get 50,000 signatures. They now have close to 250,000 signatures. In fact, let me refresh, because since posting this, yeah, 232,445, and three more just signed up in a minute. Out of the initial try to get 50,000, they're now pushing for 300,000. And granted, yeah, change.org petition has about the same impact as a lemonade stand.
This is what I was about to say.
Yeah.
What is the history of these petitions?
Yeah, I don't know anything other than, you know, being able to signal one's virtues. But
the number is
significant. Kind of,
yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, if they're looking for 50K and they end up with 300 plus.
And that shows that, you know, the fans of the show are the fans of the show. And I mean, it's not like Helmsworth was really, you know, everyone was like, ooh, yeah, can't wait for that. You know, it was just like, oh, well, I guess the show goes on. And then the more they hear, people are like, ooh, can we not? So,
well, I do like the energy of, you know, the fans coming out and saying, fix your shit. But
as we used to say on another show on the network, patch your shit.
Yes. But this, we haven't seen this effect with Star Wars, but that's also a much huge, by comparison, franchise. So a lot more inertia is probably built into it. Mm-hmm. Netflix might be willing to take notice of this.
See, I mean, given Netflix's current history with pissing people off, and we reported, you know, their hemorrhaging of users not too long ago. Netflix has a lot of shows people will watch, a lot of original content, but this is one of their bigger ones, guys. This is it's gone up 72 just since the last time I refreshed. Yeah, this is one of your bigger shows, guys. You might want to pay attention to the fans on this one, because look how well Andor has done on Disney and The Mandalorian, just by paying fan service, just by, you know, giving the fans what they wanted. We're not going to talk about the fucking Skittles swoop bike riders in the last. But other than that, which that was really a Boba Fett story, not a Mandalorian story. So,
no, you're almost encouraged to say they could look at that figure and go, yeah, maybe we should start listening to these people. But
yeah,
again, the track record of the online petition is not exactly ripe with success stories.
No, it really isn't. I mean, granted, most of them have been used for political purposes that are just laughable. It's like, you know, vote in the change.org petition to remove Donald Trump as president. Well, okay, that's not how our basis of government is founded, but good luck with that. But, you know, in this case, I mean, it's about as good as the White House petitions were. Remember when they'd have, you know, the White House would run their own petitions, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's great. We put you on that list. Good job, guys.
Yeah, and they just generally feel like they have the impact when people think they've accomplished something if they get a topic trending on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was trending. Did you see that? It was like, yeah, and then you go and see it on the list. 1,500 people are talking about it.
Yeah, it's trending because the old management of Twitter wanted it to trend.
Yeah, this doesn't mean anything. Needles are not moving.
Right.
But thank you for playing. All right, and what are we looking at? The Blizzard story? Is that what?
Yeah, the Blizzard, but I just saw something in here. Hang on. I just saw a related story. Open up the Blizzard story, and I'm going to look at this other drop real quick.
Surely. I was turning my head at this one, only because gradually we're starting to see a willingness of people and entities to push back against China, which I didn't really think was feasible, but it, just every so often another story will come out. It's like, well, they're going against the wishes of China with this one.
Yeah. And, but, and in this case, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say that Blizzard Entertainment, video game fixture that they are, announces that they're going to be suspending their game services and the new sales in China starting in 2023. That's significant.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a big deal. I mean, a lot of it has to do with that their partner in China, their agreement ends. That's when their agreement ends with them. And you know, you can't work in China unless you have a Chinese partner in your company. But this is also because Activision Blizzard is now being bought by Microsoft as well. So while their license agreement with NetEase Inc., which is the Chinese distributor of Blizzard products, is ending, you have to remember that it was Blizzard via Hearthstone that really shit the bed with their fans a couple years ago when there was a Hearthstone tournament being broadcast on Twitch, and one of the players, while being interviewed, made a reference in support of Hong Kong. And then it, yeah, we covered that quite extensively. And then it just blew up and became watching Blizzard genuflect to the Chi-Coms as rapidly as they did.
Because didn't he have like sponsorships pulled too?
Yeah, he had sponsorships pulled. They shut down his feed. They have banned him from play. And Blizzard really shit the bed on that one. So you could look at this and say, yeah, this is Blizzard finally coming around to doing the right thing, because they've had licensing agreements with NetEase since 2008. So this wasn't just like a, you know, a quick distribution channel in China that fell apart. They've been partners for a very long time, and the two parties have been unable to reach a deal for the upcoming of the contract. Now, aside from game titles that were built exclusively by NetEase that just kind of had Blizzard's license on, you know, they're, you know, you can use our products, and, you know, like World of Warcraft is one of the games that they're releasing over there. It's on the mobile format, and or Warcraft. It's that's just because that's being developed by NetEase and licensed. So that's going to still be there. But things like StarCraft, Hearthstone, Dragonflight, you know, Overwatch, those will no longer be available in China until Blizzard finds a new partner.
Yeah, that's a big market to bypass. But again, it's kind of encouraging,
mm-hmm.
just that they're willing to, or at least entertain the idea of it, because. Yeah, the last few years, all we've seen is bend the knee, bow at the waist, do whatever it takes. You got to get into China. And the tendency now is maybe we could survive without it.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, this is some kind of, you know, copium on the part of some people, too. They're like, well, you know, China, you know, has had a 2.5% drop in over year-to-year revenue in the video game market. 44.5 billion dollars still a year. Yes. So that 2.5% drop is that's one AAA title. You know, mm-hmm. that's you know, that's one game just falling on its dick.
Yes. We had a bad rollout that year.
Yeah, exactly. But it is actually the first decline in 20 years. So I mean, you can make the argument either way.
Well, it could also be the fact that so many parts of China are locked down now, when people can't get to the store to buy new video games.
That too.
But it's just maybe for that suggestion out there.
Yeah.
Harsh. But the
other sidebar in the story that I found is actually more interesting that I've been reading while we've been talking about this, and this will surprise nobody who has been paying attention, but Black Panther: Wakanda Forever and DC's Black Adam have been denied release dates in China.
Hmm. Black Adam doesn't surprise me, because I mean, China's censors are a little funny about content. Black Panther, yeah, that's a little surprising. Was he original?
Not really, because I mean, you think about China's record with, you know, how they've demanded certain things from like Disney and one of the main stars of the Star Wars trilogy, who was front and center on the American posters, being regaled down to a little pixel in China's posters because he's black. And you know, various other things. China is, for all of their work in Africa, really not fans of black people.
Makes sense. Makes sense. But
yeah.
And again, this could be maybe a reflection from Maverick's success. Black Panther this past weekend, it was slated to go like 160, 165 million.
Mm-hmm.
180. So, yeah, stuff like that. You might not miss China all that much.
Yeah, and we've talked about that on other ones too. I mean, sometimes, you know, Marvel really relies on the Chinese market, or Disney Inc. really relies on the Chinese market. But we've shown, you know, it's like we talked, like you just said, with Maverick and other titles that don't bend the knee too fucking fantastic. I mean, yes, okay, well, they're rah-rah America jingoism, but that sells to the rest of the world outside of China.
Yeah, it turns out people dig that, not just here. Yeah, I mean, Maverick has been stupid successful overseas.
Still successful. Still going.
And I mean, with Black Panther exceeding expectations like it did, it didn't surprise me so much. I was just curious because, you know, Chadwick Boseman won't be in it, of course. And the thing that was helping it out, though, is it is still following storylines from the book.
Yeah. But I mean, the main complaint about it is it's boring. And then the only really good parts of the movie are when they're kind of doing their, you know, send off to Boseman. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of, there was some two very emotional scenes in the movie regarding his character. So they, you know, it was kind of like, okay. Yeah, that's where, you know, and then they were talking about the fight sequences in it where it's like, these don't matter. You know, there's no real urgency in it because, you know, that, you know, these two movies are going to continue to spin off. So there's no, you know, even the baddie isn't really a baddie.
But hey, look at the box office. You can't really complain about it, I guess.
Yeah, I could shit in the, I could put, take a shit in the box and put MCU on it and make $1 billion.
It's pretty much.
I've got the time. If you want me to take a shit in the box, I'll do it.
Well, let's. I'd like your elevator pitch, but I'll have my people call your people. Let's see what they say. I did just to put a bow on everything here. A couple weeks ago, Chris Saliza, he's got this little
newsletter
side column thing he does. I don't know, it's called the Upside Down or something like that. But he explores cultural items and looks at them in a different framework, and was proposing that we had an actual blueprint for making better cities that are attuned to the pedestrian and aren't so dependent upon vehicles. And the central square is for the citizenry, and just outside the city square are the farmlands that could sustain. And this is a new. All of this was based on Wakanda.
The
fake
the xenophobic patriarchal society of Wakanda.
Yes, that's walled off from other societies. That's
Hey, walls work.
Monochromatic. And as I said, yeah, that's a perfect plan, Chris. We just need to have a vibranium-based economy and everything will be fantastic.
Or tools. For your
fake city that doesn't exist and has no proven track record. By all means, let's adjust our metropolitan areas based on that.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, as Cranky said, whose leaders are determined by combat, which I'm on board with. I said this in 2016. We need to take all the primary contenders and Thunderdome them.
Combatants, choose your rakes.
Dying times here.
I'm all for it. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up here, right? I think perfectly. Top of the hour. All right, Ordy, where can people find some more of your content?
Well, you can find me as Yoda Secreto on Twitter this week. Discord channel, if you're one of those people who enjoy Discord, you can find me. I'm taking the rest of the week off from podcasting. You can find me on Wednesdays with Rick Producer Rick on Rick and Ordy. And then next week you can find me also on Juxtaposition. How about you? Where can people find you?
Yes, well, I'm found daily over at townhall.com with my media column called Riff from the Headlines. Also, daily fixture over on the front page of Red State. I've got my twice-a-week podcast there called Liable Sources, where I delve even deeper into the maw that is our publishing and media complex of the country. Also can be heard on this very network. Next Thursday, I'll be here with Paul Young from ScreenRant.com as we
on Thanksgiving?
We'll probably be recording for it. I don't know when we're going to play it, but we're noodling a Thanksgiving-themed movie.
Okay.
We have a couple in mind. I have one in particular I think would be somewhat fitting, let's just say.
All right.
We're probably going to kick it around this weekend. Also can be heard here on Tuesday evenings, starting at 8:45, with the ever-effervescent Aggie Regan as she and I delve into cocktails and culture and leisure and art and sports with the Cocktail Lounge. And then if you need more of me than that, and let's face it, you do. If you head over to Twitter, you can find me at Martini Shark, also at Instagram, also at Truth for now. But anywhere you want me, I'll be available. All right, gang, we are going to be back a week after Thanksgiving with even more vital and important entertainment information for you here on The Culture Shift.
Hail Hydra.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.